Well, welcome back to the One Thing podcast, where we all get to usher in the new age of humanity beyond Homo sapiens, which Lori and I call Homo Spiritus, by practicing dancing with the one thing that individuals, communities, and countries have yet to try en masse. That one thing is the connection to the higher self part of our true self anatomy that people call by various different names, and whatever your name is welcome. Our prime directive above all else is to make and constantly return to tat connection, day in and day out, and breath in and breath out, as our first step in dealing with everything in our daily life, rather than viewing problems as things we can solve separately from tat. And this episode is called Your Tat Checklist for engaging with others. And we'll unpack that bit by bit, but over to you.
Okay, sounds good. Juicy conversation. And of course, we're not going to be covering every single thing on the, you know, like included in our checklist, but we're going to cover the ones that seem important to start with to us anyway. And so first, let's frame this up. We want to talk about having conversations, not only with ourselves, but with people in person, and then also in the online space, and especially social media, because I know it can get kind of sticky there. And we're really talking about the value of engaging with others, as it can only be as healthy as our own connection to our higher self or our higher presence or whatever you're choosing to call that. And this is the one thing that we haven't actually tried en masse, right? Because human opinions in and of themselves, disconnected from the source of life, don't mean much, right? It's just a recycling of history. And we all know how that has gone. So we're really trying to do our best sales job to invite you to, you know, first and foremost, engage in that connection, connect with your higher self, and then from that place, have healthy engagement, you know, with people in your world and online.
And what we want to kind of frame at the front end of this episode is the notion that being engaged, or thinking we're engaged with the one thing while being disengaged from ourselves, is impossible. If we're truly connected, then there's automatically a connection between internal connection and connection with higher love, higher wisdom, higher power. And so, you know, thinking we're connected when we're not is where the breakdowns happen first. That's where they start. That's where we disengage from others.
Yeah, good point. Good point. So we're going to go through, you know, like I said, this little checklist, and we're just thinking of them as guidelines and practices for, you know, establishing and maintaining and curating, you know, good relationships and connections, and restoring our connection with our higher self while we're interacting with others. And of course, we have to say that this first requires us to be, you know, having had some practice with this constant connection with our higher self. I heard something last Saturday that was talking about how important the governance of the human is. And it's kind of along these lines. It's like, how, what does this mean to govern ourselves? Well, it means to be having, to me anyway, it means having a connection between our head and our heart, between our higher mind and our lower human mind, between our heart and the person that we're engaging with heart, between our being, our system, and life, right? Like, we can call life nature, we can call it the cosmic life force, it doesn't matter, but it's being in a conscious, aware connection with that as often as we can possibly be. And if that of course takes practice.
It sure does. It's not even anything close to a one and done.
Mm-mm.
It's an ongoing emerging practice. And I love that you added the word curating, because
yes,
that's really juicy. And before I share a story, I would love for you to share with our audience what you mean by curating.
Oftentimes we hear that word curate when we hear of a museum putting together, a new arrival of art. Maybe it's coming from Europe or whatever, wherever it's coming from, or even an art gallery curating a new art show. And we can expand on that and consider that we can actually curate our lives. We can curate our connection with ourselves. We can curate our connection with others. It just means being, to me anyway, it means being consciously on purpose and intentional about how we would want, like a gallery owner hangs a piece, the pieces the way he or she would like them to be seen as people walk through. That's a conscious curation of the body of work in his or her gallery. So if you want to say more on that, that's how I see it. So we're just being, using our will, our choice as a human being to elevate and curate our consciousness.
Yes. And that's why I wanted you to say a little bit more, because I was realizing that the word curation is not often enough used in the context of relationships. And so I love introducing curation into the essence of how we are in our relationships. Mm-hmm. So before we start unpacking the checklist itself, I first want to just share a story some of you may have heard, and maybe many of you have not, which is a story about relationships and spirituality. It's kind of a warning story. And there are, of course, as with all of these teaching stories, there are bunches of different variations on it. But the version I'm going to tell is this one. There's a monk in ancient China who decides to leave his village and to go onto a mountaintop outside of the village in order to attain enlightenment. And he's there for a very long period of time. And over time, he develops this kind of reputation for being enlightened or becoming more enlightened. And people start to come and visit him to ask for his sage advice and things along those lines. And after this fairly long period of time, the monk decides that he is complete with his time in isolation on the mountaintop, that he's attained enlightenment, and he comes back down off of the mountain into the village. And within a half hour of arriving in the village, he's in a fist fight with someone. And the purpose of the teaching story is really, at least from my point of view, it's alerting us to the fact that we can attain altered states of consciousness on our own. We can attain a state of enlightened consciousness on our own in private. But the real test, the real measure of enlightenment, the real measure of our spiritual evolution and uplifting is in how we are in our relationships with other people, not how we are on our own. And I'll go one step further. It's how we are in our relationships with other people when things get tough.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the point of sharing the teaching story in the context of this episode.
Yeah, good story. Good talk.
Good talk.
we laugh about that. So one of the things to consider having on your checklist is a very clear sense of what it feels like for you to be in your center, and that, that still point of peace, which is probably where the guy on the mountaintop was. And then what does it feel like when you feel triggered? Like it's a very distinct, there's distinction between those two feelings in my system. And, I tend to use this idea of when I'm triggered, it feels like someone has put a pencil, or I have put a pencil in the fan, and it's like the fan is getting all weird. And so that's my cue that I've lost my center, I've disconnected, and that I can come. My first order of business, as far as I've learned, is to come back to center so that I can have whatever conversation or whatever needs to be said next or not be said next, be assisted and guided by my higher wisdom, my higher intelligence, that part of all of us that sees a broader view and knows, you know, knows truth, knows a higher level of truth. So if you don't already know the difference in your system, this is beyond your head. This is like the tension of the trigger or the calm of the center. Like you know, we want to know those places in ourselves so that we can recognize when we've gotten out of balance.
Mm-hmm. And I like that, the tension of the trigger and the calm of the center.
Yeah.
Another item on the checklist is whether we're in a state of openness and receptivity or whether we're in a state of defensiveness. And so when I'm open, I'm not thinking about what's the next thing I'm going to say or what's the retort that I'm going to offer up in a discussion. I'm present. I'm not just centered, but I'm in a state of receptivity or openness, in contrast to being defensive, or in relationship research, it's referred to as impervious to influence. If I'm in a state of connectedness with the one thing, I can hear anything from anyone, no matter how different what they're saying is from my perspective, and not be triggered, not be thrown off center, not to lose my openness. So if you think about open as the ideal state and think about a continuum between open and two extremes that are equally unhelpful. At one extreme, instead of openness, is impervious to input. And at the other extreme is the opposite of impervious to input. It's where we're in an indiscriminate sponge. We just absorb anything anyone says and make it, turn ourselves into a pretzel to make it be true for us when it's not true for us. So open versus defensive or impervious or an indiscriminate sponge is another item on the checklist.
Perfect. And the next one is the consideration of just being in this inquiry when you're engaging with another person is, am I holding the space for there to be a win-win experience between all parties involved, or do I need to be right? You know, there's in the Course in Miracles, which is a spiritual text, there's this idea of if you can either be right or you can be happy. I was talking about that one time years ago with a patient, and she says, but I am happy when I'm right. It was so funny. Anyway, it's the difference between cooperation, you know, and finding a broader way that everybody gets to win, and more, you know, it being right, I think, falls under the umbrella of more like competition. And that's an old paradigm. That's energy that is sizzling away from our constructs as we know them to be. And so the more of us who step up with win-win and with cooperative, you know, systems and ideas and thoughts and words and actions, the quicker we'll actually find ourselves in a collective that is more cooperative than competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm not talking about eliminating, you know, healthy competition where we strive to be better because of, you know, a person that we're running against or swimming with or whatever, you know what I'm saying about that. But it's more just the not trying to win over.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And kind of a variation on that, or maybe a drawing out of certain parts of win-win versus being right, is coercion versus collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
So in coercion, I'm focused on converting you over to my point of view or the solution I'm advocating or my position or whatever that might happen to be. And collaborative is the state of connection with the one thing, because with the one thing, a variation on win-win is that we have the humility that says, I probably see parts of a larger picture that are important to include, but I'm humble enough to know that neither I nor any other single person or single group sees the whole picture. So of course I'm going to offer my part of the picture into the conversation. And in a collaborative mindset, the humility part is I'm offering my part of the picture because you're going to be offering your part of the picture too. And when we combine the parts of the picture that each of us is more attuned to, we collectively start to see a whole or more complete picture. So TOT Connection is about collaboration as a form of creating win-win solutions.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. It's funny because David and I sometimes watch this HGTV, House Hunters International, and it's just so interesting to watch how the couples, you know, usually it's couples that are looking for a place somewhere outside of the U.S. and there's a little bit of a tug of war between which place they're going to get. And often the couple will, one part of the couple will say, oh, he or she is going to win this one, you know, as if the other one has to sort of give in and give up and that kind of thing. There are couples who do what David just said, where they kind of expand the capacity to collaborate, and then there is no winning. There's just the, you know, the cultivation of something good that works for all parties. So anyway, we just find that funny to watch. Okay, so the next thing on the checklist is the difference between self-disclosure and telling another about them, which tends to put the other in a more defensive position. Because, you know, I do this a lot. I think I'm a little bit better. I mean, the only reason we have this list is because we know them, because we we have our own, you know, tripping and falling with them and hopefully getting better. So, you know, we're not by any means presenting this information as if we're experts, you know, or perfect at it. But I remember I was really afraid to sort of have self-disclosure or speak my truth. And I didn't know I could trust myself to not be, you know, like rigid and harsh. So I started practicing years ago with customer service representatives on the phone. And I thought, well, if I practice being calm and saying what's important here, you know, if you're calling customer service, you're usually complaining about something. So, or, you know, hoping for something to be better. And then that went okay. It was like, oh, okay, I can actually do this and the roof doesn't cave. And then I started doing it to, you know, people who were in person, like grocery store clerks or anybody I would exchange with, you know, in the world. And I figured, well, they don't know me. I probably will never see them again. So I can just do my best. And if I make a mistake or if I trip and fall or don't say the right thing, you know, it's okay. Well, all of that taught me how to be, you know, in a engaging relationship with someone and speak my truth and hopefully, you know, not push against what they're doing and tell them what they are doing or how they should do it or anything like that, because that doesn't really foster an openness on behalf of the other person, but rather just talking about how things are landing for me, you know, and how we might come about it in a better way. So I don't know if you want to say anything more about that, but self-disclosure versus telling the other person about them or spouting philosophy or telling another person how I think it should be. I mean, I'm always watching myself on that.
Yes. And the only thing I'll add, because I love how you've worded that, is a variation on what appears to be self-disclosure and isn't. And it's the famous, I feel that you are blank, blank, blank. Oh, I'm just telling you how I feel. No, that is the pretense of self-disclosure. That's actually an attack on or a judgment about the other person. And judging the other person is not personal transparency. Saying that when you said blank, 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 what got activated in me was sadness or fear or shame or guilt or things like that. That's self-disclosure versus I feel that you are a judgmental person is not self-disclosure.
Yeah, good point. Good addition.
So the next item on our checklist is focusing on positions or premature solutions versus disclosing deep concerns and high intentions. So what we mean by that is that in a top disconnected state, what we end up in is these arm wrestling matches where I keep telling you about my position or a solution that I'm advocating instead of a form of self-disclosure that looks underneath or that shares what's underneath the position I'm taking or the solution I'm advocating by telling you about the deep concerns and or high intentions that I have that led to the position I'm advocating or the solution that I'm advocating. So this is a little bit tricky because people can think that if they're stating their positions or the solutions that they're advocating, that they're actually doing self-disclosure. And that's not self-disclosure. Go ahead.
No, you finish.
Oh, that what that is a hiding of self-disclosure. It's not a top connected state. Because if we're actually doing self-disclosure, like I said a moment ago, what we're disclosing is the deep concerns and high intentions that led to those advocated positions or solutions.
Yeah, and this is tricky. And I would like to tell every person listening that David is exquisite at this. And if you want to learn more, you could go to his Facebook page and just look at some of the comments he makes to other people. He walks this line so beautifully. And, you know, it's just a great way to learn how to at least notice the difference between, you know, hiding behind self-disclosure. He does a very good job at this. So
thank you.
He's masterful. So I recommend you learn from him.
And I have a whole training program on how to have difficult discussions about touchy topics in transformative ways. And the centerpiece of that is learning how to identify and disclose deep concerns and high intentions.
Right. It's so beautiful. I recommend you guys do that. So, okay. So the other thing is to discover inside yourself, like this is a noticing, a witnessing, a self-observation piece without judgment. Like, where do you leave your taught connection? And you're just watching yourself, like at what point you're connected. And then boom, you drop out. and you're just watching this so that you can find inside of yourselves ways to do that less and less, you know, and you'll see this, you'll want to watch this in yourself when you're engaging with someone, whether it's in person or, you know, in a social media scenario, but watch for like your own energy. You're watching for aggression, maybe even rage. Obviously that's means you're triggered. Our source, our higher presence, does not have the need to be aggressive or to go to places of rage in order to be effective. Watch where you give up your power, right? Like you abdicate your power, your sense of empowerment. Notice if you're rebellious, if you're someone who, you know, can easily go to a rebellious path. And other places to look for is where you feel helpless, like you're David uses the term learned helplessness, and or being a victim of anything. Because, you know, from a connected place, there really are no victims kind of thing. And I'm not talking about war-torn land. I'm talking about, you know, I mean, that's another conversation. But right now we're talking about how we engage with another person. And so we just want to watch that we don't slip in, because it's easy. These things happen so quickly. We can slip into victim and not really recognize it. And then we're disconnected and we're engaging in ways that may not be helpful. And watch for any unworthiness, undeservedness to be having a conversation with high intentions. I like how David says that. Watch your entitlement, watch your your quick, possibly quick, thing to ways of wanting to blame and shaming others or self, right? Like we say, can easily shame ourselves, blame ourselves, shame or blame others. So those are some places to just watch. Those tend to be common landmines, if you will, for human beings. So, and you're not in observation of these places to berate yourself. You're in observation and you're witnessing so that you can, create a plan when you get at that choice point of, oh, right in this moment, I want to slip into unworthiness. What are my other options? But it's really important to think through those things ahead of time, because it's hard to have access to it when you're triggered. So the practice is, oh, I get triggered and go into unworthiness a lot. What other choices might I have? And think about that ahead of time, and then play with your options when you do get triggered, so you can see what works for you, in order to stay connected. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that's a marvelous symptoms list. And I'm going to add to that symptoms list the stress responses styles. So there are basically four styles of reactivity when we're under stress at a level where the thinking part of our brain turns off and the reptile part of our brain, the limbic system, turns on. And those four states that are top disconnected states are fight, flight, freeze, and faint. So fight is, you put up your dukes either literally or just emotionally and verbally.
Defensiveness and protective, self-protection. Yes.
And flight is running away. And freeze is deer in the headlights, just paralysis. And faint is playing possum, where you essentially get invisible. You roll over and play dead and hope that if you play dead for long enough, the threat passes. So those are the four stress responses that are clues that we're out of taut connection. And think of all of these symptoms, the list of symptoms that Lori just mentioned, and then these four stress type responses as your vapor trails for spotting when you've left taut connection, when you're interacting with someone, whether in person or online. And what I mean by a vapor trail is that if you look up at the sky and you see this trail in the sky, and I'm not talking about, contrails and things like that. That's a whole other discussion. I'm talking about the vapor trails that are left behind when a jet passes overhead. And you can see the vapor trail, but sometimes you can't even see the jet that left the vapor trail, but that the jet was there because of the vapor trails left behind. And we encourage you to get acquainted with your vapor trails: aggression, rage, abdication, rebellion, being oppositional, helplessness, victim thinking, unworthiness, entitled, blame, shame, fight, flight, freeze, faint, any of those. Which are your vapor trails that are your clue that when you're interacting with someone, you have lost or disconnected from taut? Yeah, from the one thing, so that you know that that's a moment to do what Lori is about to share, that we recommend that you do when you spot one of these vapor trails.
Yeah, I love that term, vapor trails. Well said. And also, you might want to be aware that, you might be a fight person at work, and you might be a freeze person in, like your primary relationship, and then you might be a fawn person or a faint person in your family. It may not be the same everywhere, but what you're doing is just observing. And so what I'd like to offer is, this is a tool. It's a combination of a few things in Chinese medicine and heart math, but it's very simply called the pause practice, where when you feel that you have been triggered, right? You just take a moment, you take a pause, and you check into where in your body to where you might feel tension or the energy of the trigger, where it might live in your body. And initially you may not figure that out right away, but don't worry. The more you practice this, the better you get at it. And then you can either put your hand on your heart or not. But if you, and I say or not, because if you're not in a place where if it seems weird or something like that, but if you drop your awareness into your heart, that's like one of the places to, you know, to pause into in order to stay connected and not go down the rabbit hole of, you know, the trigger, so to speak. And, you know, then from a Chinese medicine's perspective, if you just invite your presence back into your heart, you can invite your higher self, your spirit. You know, in Chinese medicine, it's called Shen. And when we get triggered, and if it's too intense of a trigger, we actually fly out of our heart. You know, where our spirit leaves our heart, because it's a bad scene, you know, to indulge a trigger. And this is what it means by the governance of the human. We cannot be indulging triggers and expect for there to be peace in the world, right? We have to govern. If we want better government in any country in the world, we have to be a citizenry of self-governed humans, right? That where we have a governance of our own systems. And so, you know, I'm a big advocate of not expecting the government to do the work that each of us individually are supposed to do. So the pause practice just gives us a tool to, so one, it's a three-step thing. One is, well, it's a part, you know, A before the one, but you just notice you're triggered, right? And then one is you notice where in your body you might feel the energy of that trigger. Two, you pause, you can take a breath, and you bring your awareness to your heart. And then three, you just invite your presence, your spirit, your source of energy back into your heart. So you feel connected. This can happen, you know, in very 3-5 seconds, right? So maybe not in the beginning. And honestly, if you're pausing, like, let's say you're in an intense relationship with conversation with someone, and you pause and the person's like, "Hey, where'd you go?" You could say, "Just give me 5 or 10 seconds here. I just want to come back to myself before I respond." You know, that's a very reasonable request. It's, you know, I think anybody would honor that.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, what I want to add about this is that this might sound deceptively simple. So how could it possibly work? Well, it's deceptively simple because it works, and because it sounds easier when described than it is to actually practice. This is a new set of muscles for a lot of us, this pause practice. And so it doesn't have to be, and in my bias, it shouldn't be more complicated than this. This is where self-governance starts.
Exactly. And spirit is not complicated. Spirit is simple. Only our mind has a need to complicate things. And there's a fair amount of research, about a 40 years worth of research from the HeartMath Institute, on what happens when we reconnect with our heart and we take that pause and we take a breath. And, you know, they don't talk about the inviting spirit or the Shen part that I have added, but it's the research is very, very solid. So
absolutely. Ready to move on to takeaways?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll wrap it up here. Yeah.
Okay. So the takeaway I want to offer is that staying really centered in your personal power is a practice. It's not a one and done. It's a muscle to be developed. So start small, practice online first. Like Lori said earlier in this episode, if doing that in person feels too overwhelming as a place to start, and if it doesn't, if doing it in person doesn't feel too overwhelming, then just go straight to that. But start small, practice in low stress situations, reconnecting with the one thing. And then as you develop that muscle, your ability to stay connected to the one thing in higher and higher and higher stress situations will naturally strengthen itself.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. And I also would like to offer to any listener who feels a resonance with this, a complimentary mini course on how to cultivate what we've been talking about. So it's a 5-day video course. You can do it in as many days as you want, but it's set up to be, you know, 5 parts. And every day goes through one thing. So we start with grounding and then connecting and then being present and then being embodied and then being purposeful. And those kind of build on each other. And it's called the 5-Day Energy Kickstart. I think the link to get that for free is going to be in the show notes. I highly recommend that you use it as a way of practicing. It even expands on what David and I have talked about. So use it as a way of practicing. In my opinion, the reason I created this is because it's foundational to every human being. Even, you know, people who are spirit-centered and spiritual, you know, we forget those foundational pieces. And so coming back to them on the regular is vital. And I invite you to do that no matter where you are on your spiritual path.
And just to be clear, depending on where you're listening to this, you might not see show notes. So
okay.
Are you able to offer right on the recording the link?
What do you mean by right on the recording?
Right now, as we're recording this.
Oh, just say the URL you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get it right now. It's www.sacredhealthacademy.com. It's kind of long, /kickstart, one word, -your-energy-5-day-reset-e. Sorry for the length of that.
So do it again. So it's sacredhealthacademy.com/kickstart-your-energy-5-day-reset-e. Right. And 5 is the number 5.
5
is
the number 5. 5. Yes, that's correct.
Good.
Yeah. And you can always leave a comment in our totpodcast.net or in the Facebook group if you happen to be a Facebook group person, or in this one, the one thing, and ask for it if you can't find it.
Yes. Good. Yeah.
Great. Okay. So I think we are ready to wrap. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it has come to our attention that our next episode is going to be more on the governance, this governance of each of us as a human being, which is also, I like to say it as the governance between our humanity and our divinity in order to affect governance in whatever country that we are in. So until next time, remember to dance with your better half, the one thing, so that you can keep living more and more fully as Homo Spiritus.